His name is Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. His name is Jim Shear, most tenured DJ in the history of music television. It's the Week in Music with Lyle and Jim, and it all starts now.
Hey everybody, my name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And on today's episode, Lyle Pressler goes undercover at a Selena Gomez concert and will give us the full details. The Kanye West surprise gig fake out, the return of the Descendants, Drake's double doozer of a week. But before all of that, on Friday, Muhammad Ali, the late and greatest Muhammad Ali, passed away at the age of 74. Muhammad Ali might have been a boxer by trade, but he was all rock star. Lyle, what does the passing of Muhammad Ali mean to you?
Well, I have to say that he was one of those early heroes of mine. I loved him growing up, and I loved him. I loved Hank Aaron. I was so devastated when he lost that first fight to Joe Frazier. I mean, I wasn't really old enough to completely understand the whole thing, and I'm not really a boxing fan per se, but there was just something about him that I really loved, and I think that obviously there's been, you know, hundreds of hours of discussion about him in the past couple of days, but anybody who doesn't understand just what a rock star he was. You can just do a little bit of research and find out. And the guy had enormous impact on everything from, obviously, boxing to the culture at large to the legal system. I mean, people forget that his case went all the way to the Supreme Court in a fascinating set of rulings. Which had to do with the ability to be a conscientious objector to the war, but also to the right of states to revoke his boxing license. He was a guy who, regardless of what you feel about him as a person, he literally put his money where his big mouth was. Because you know, I mean, one of the things that people don't understand was that when he was drafted and refused to go to Vietnam, he wasn't going to go and like fight in the Tet Offensive. I mean, they had already told him, you're going to be in the rear with the gear, you're going to do boxing exhibitions, we're going to use you as a promotional tool for the U.S. Army. So he could have gone in, done a year maybe, been out. He could have even boxed while he was in the military. It's doubtful that he even would have been shipped out of the United States, but he refused to put his name on it. He just would not go for something that he didn't believe in, and as a result, sacrificed 3 years of his career, had to spend an enormous amount of money in legal fees. He was broke by the end of it, and took the case all the way to the Supreme Court. And I think that sometimes people fail to understand the sacrifice that he decided to make, not because he was doing it for everybody else, but he was doing it for himself. And of course, his relationship with Coward Cosell. Here's a music tip. If you want to hear a really cool song that sort of imagines Muhammad Ali and the role that he and Howard Cosell played with each other, it's a song called Boxing. It's off of the first Ben Folds 5 record. It's done as a waltz, which is kind of appropriate because of boxing. And it's Ali talking to Cosell. It's a really great song. It's a neat little way of looking at their relationship, but I thought he was just an awesome guy, and I have a personal experience with him. In about 1982 or 83, somewhere in that range, I was working as a waiter. I was working as a waiter in a French restaurant. That's another musical thing that doesn't have anything to do with him, but. But I was working as a waiter in this little French bistro type thing, and it was afternoon, and mainly in the afternoon we just served, you know, cappuccinos to, you know, rich ladies. But so the restaurant was completely empty, and who walks in with one of his children but Muhammad Ali? And a couple of guys with bow ties, so you know who they were. Any event, he wanted a Coke for his kid. And I went and got the Coke, and you know, he's like, offers pass it. No, you're not paying for this. It's just a Coke, you know. So I gave him the Coke, and Ali gave me, I think it was a $50 bill, and said, keep it. And
wow.
I know. And I didn't, it wasn't one of those situations where I could feel comfortable asking for his autograph or anything like that. But, and that was, I guess, probably, you know, right around the time that he was about to be diagnosed with Parkinson's. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that was my personal experience. But
that's great.
It was one of those things where it's just surreal. You're sitting in this empty restaurant and nothing's going on. You're bored to death. And all of a sudden you go, oh my God. That's Muhammad Ali.
The greatest of all time.
I think the greatest of all time. I mean, you can debate it from a boxing standpoint, but
I'm in my early 40s. My first memory of Muhammad Ali was when he was on Different Strokes.
Mm.
Arnold pretended he was sick, and then Muhammad Ali comes over his house and he gives him an autograph. And then shortly after that, he is diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
Right.
And for the last 30 years, you don't hear a peep from Muhammad Ali. I mean, you hear stories of him, but you don't hear that brash trash talk that he's known for. So throughout my life, he was called the greatest of all time. I never really heard him speak,
right.
But I never doubted for a second that he wasn't the greatest of all time.
Right. And of course, that's a name he gave to himself. But it's a very cruel thing that here's a man who, in many ways, made his career by being so eloquent and so brash, who was reduced to a person who couldn't really speak. Now his mind, a lot of people think that because he couldn't speak, his mind wasn't still there, but his mind was there.
Right.
And he wrote things that were quite eloquent. But you're right, he couldn't speak, and therefore that part of him, the vibrant part of him that you can go back and look at old footage of, was gone, completely gone.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as an international figure, I think that probably he and Babe Ruth were the two biggest athletes of the last 100 and how many years.
And you could probably throw Pele in that mix, too.
Pele's definitely there, too.
When I think of Muhammad Ali, I also think back to 1964 of the picture he took with the Beatles. And I heard stories of that famous interaction. And it's right before, I mean, both of them were on the way, but they weren't, I don't think, mega stars yet. I heard that the Beatles didn't want to meet Muhammad Ali because they just thought he was a big mouth that was fighting this Sonny Liston guy. And then after Muhammad Ali met the Beatles, he said, well, who are those sissies?
Yeah, I mean, you can't imagine a better photo op to get those two icons in the same photo. I mean, that's really a wonderful, wonderful picture.
And then I think of a few years ago, I have a neighbor in my apartment building who's really into soul and funk music. And she shared the documentary Soul Power with me, which was a concert that they had in 1974 in Zaire, which was a big promotional event for the Rumble in the Jungle fight. So on the bill, you had James Brown, Bill Withers, B.B. King, The Spinners, Celia Cruz was there. So I was thinking, if Muhammad Ali lived today, he would probably be putting on Lollapalooza or Coachella.
Yeah. What would he call it, though?
He was knee-deep in music. My dad was telling me a story where Muhammad Ali shared a poem with Johnny Cash, and then Johnny Cash made a song out of it.
Wow.
So, I mean, he was all over sports, all over pop culture, all over music.
Yeah, and really all over, exactly, all over our culture. He's embedded in it. And I also think, I mean, I do think in this era where, unfortunately, people are vilifying Muslims all over the place. He presents a really nice counterpoint to those ridiculous arguments and racist comments.
And what I love about Muhammad Ali is that there's not one documentary.
Right.
There's a slew of documentaries.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
About legal battles or fights or just his effect on pop culture.
Yeah.
So I can't think of anyone else where there's so many documentaries about so many events of their life.
Well, and also he lived essentially three lives. I mean, he lived the Cassius Clay life, where here's a brash underdog coming on the scene saying he's going to beat everybody, and he does. Then you have the Muhammad Ali period, and you have the legal battles. And then you have the Parkinson's period, where he became mm-hmm. sort of an ambassador to the world. So he didn't live that long, but man, did he live.
Yes.
We should all be so lucky.
So, Lyle, last week we went through some of the lineup at Governor's Ball held in New York City, helping everybody decide who to see when. Turns out our picks for Sunday were moot since the final day was canceled due to severe weather. And if you're wondering, Kanye West was headlining on Sunday, and the teased quote-unquote special guest was going to be Prophets of Rage.
Yes. That was a tremendous lineup they had going on there, and it was unfortunate that it just didn't work out.
And it was canceled early in the day.
Yeah, they weren't going to take any chances. You had talked earlier in another show about Lightning and about mm-hmm. Beyonce, you know, and Lightning's a very, it's like sort of like you grow up with Lightning. Yeah, don't run out into the middle of a meadow with an umbrella or something. But mm-hmm. it's a very serious thing, and you can't put those people at risk. So I think they were probably right in calling the event. I know that Hot 97, their summer jam, they actually went ahead with stuff, and it turned out okay.
I think theirs was postponed for a little bit.
Well, they canceled, I think, the Village part of it, which was the earlier stage.
Right.
But then they went ahead with the main stuff at mm-hmm. like 8:30. But you know, you can't predict that. Well, you can't predict the weather. People make a living doing it. But you can't fool around with that. So I think they made the right decision.
Yeah, we mentioned that a handful of years ago, there were all those concert tragedies where mm-hmm. stages would collapse. And then after that, no festivals are taking chances anymore.
No, you can't. You can't. Because for one thing, your insurance is going to be such that if you don't follow the rules, you're out of luck.
And then I want to apologize to everyone, much like a magazine would have a correction. Last week when I was reading the Governor Ball's list, I was reading a list from the internet, but I don't know if I clicked on something or I was having issues with the internet spreadsheet. But the list didn't have the headliners, The Strokes, The Killers, and Kanye West.
Oh, my.
So, and while I read the headliners, because last week I said the headliners were Robin, Death Cab for Cutie, and MA3, and I thought to myself, that seems kind of light.
It did seem a little light to me, but I wasn't going to say anything.
But I rationalized it by thinking, well, it's New York City, people like their indie rock, it's going to be outside. Sure, they would pay for it. So I apologize for slighting the headliners of Governor's Ball, The Strokes, The Killers, and Kanye West. That makes more sense.
I think they're going to get over it, Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from here on out, if you are having a festival, on your homepage, you need to have an image of the poster.
Yes.
With the headliners in big, bold letters. No more of these internet spreadsheets. Because it actually took me a couple minutes to find the lineup of Governor's Ball. I want that on the landing page.
Exactly.
But I'm making no excuses.
You tell them, Jim.
My bad. So speaking of Governor's Ball, since Sunday was canceled, Kanye West had no headlining set. So later that night, spurred by a couple of his tweets, around 2,000 fans converged outside of Webster Hall in New York City for a surprise 2 a.m. concert. Kim Kardashian posted a Snapchat video of her husband contacting authorities to have video screens put up near the venue so those unable to get in could have a party outside. Kanye drove by.
Can we just stop there for a second?
Uh-huh.
What office in New York City do you call up to say, hey, you know what? I'd like to have some video screens put up. Is there an actual office? Like, you call up and just go, okay, what size do you want? Well, we've got small, medium, large. We got high def. We got low def. What do you want? I found that whole thing a little suspicious. Like, it just sort of seemed to me, and I'm not saying that they didn't try, but at a certain point, like, you know, there was all this talk about it. Oh, he's running around town. He's calling all these people. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I mean, you know, they gave it their best shot at Webster Hall. It didn't work out.
No, yeah. So Kanye drove by, and he never performed. The concert never happened.
So what's the deal? Is that why someone was knocking on my door at 1 o'clock in the morning? Hey, Lyle, you got a backyard? You got any video? You got any video screens lying around?
What happened? Was it just a publicity stunt?
Well, I don't.
Did he try to make it happen?
You know, it's sort of hard to say because the problem was is that you had all those people in the street, and I guess people were standing on cars and stuff like that, which is an immediate problem. You had rain too, right? So it wasn't exactly the nicest environment for everybody. You know, I the one thing I would say is that Kanye and his people have to know that if he tweets something like that, it's almost an instantaneous crowd, right? I mean, it's not like he's going to tweet, hey, how about Webster Hall, and people aren't going to show up. So, I mean, I found the thing, I think he probably intended to play, but I think it probably got to the point where it was out of control. And I wouldn't be surprised if the authorities didn't say, look, you know, we can't deal with this, okay? We're not going to pull people off of regular assignment to put them over here to deal with this thing that we didn't know about. If we'd known about this, if you told us in advance, then maybe so, but we're not going to like rush to deal with this. And then they claimed that they tried to find other venues after the Webster Hall thing fell through. And I'm thinking, well, that's not going to fly at all. I mean, there's no way you're going to say, oh, hey, all you cops here, we're going to move down the street. You know, it didn't. I think once the opportunity was gone, that was kind of it. And I think he had intentions of playing. I mean, I do. But I think it probably just got out of hand, and I think
because it's tough. It's tough to throw an impromptu block party in New York City.
Yeah.
Or then call employees at Terminal 5 and say, well, listen, the Webster Hall show didn't work out. Can we have a show at Terminal 5 at 4 a.m.?
Right. So. Yeah, and I mean, there are also, I think, union implications to all that too, probably, right? You know, you're gonna ask your people to stick around. They're going to get double time now, and now it becomes an incredibly expensive proposition.
Yeah, so good idea, but it didn't happen. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to play Yay, A, or Nay.
I hear a lot of talk about old-time great fighters. I hear people say that Joe Louis, Jack Dempsey, Jack Johnson, Jim Jeffries, and all of them would have annihilated the likes of myself, Muhammad Ali. After watching these films, watching their opponents, watching their styles, watching how they fought, watching the footwork and their speed, and my critics will admit that I am the fastest heavyweight in the history of boxing with feet and hands. It may come as a shock to you, but I say that I would have beat every heavyweight that ever lived before me.
Yes, everybody. Jim Shearer with Lyle Presler. We're going to play a new game right now, Lyle. It's called Yay, A, or Nay.
Okay.
I assume
it's like the carometer.
Yeah. Kind of like the carometer.
Carometer,
yeah.
I'm sorry. speedometer. Oh, kind of like speedometer.
Yeah, warm, hot, or cold. So I'm going to go through these stories. You tell me if it's a yay, A, or nay. Metallica's James Hetfield and Kirk Hammett performed the Star Spangled Banner on Monday night during Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final in San Jose. Yay, A, or nay?
I think A. I mean, one thing I wanted to ask you, do you think the players get annoyed by this stuff? Like, I watched the video, and it seemed like even as they were sort of finishing, the goalie, like, you know, moved into the crease, you know, and just basically said, like, okay, you guys done. I mean,
I think the superstitious players probably hate it because they have a routine.
Right, exactly.
And throughout the season, there's a normal person who sings the national anthem at a majority of the games.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, like the Penguins have a guy named Jeff Jimerson, and I would say for 80-90% of the games, he sings the national anthem.
Gotcha. Well,
so when you throw people outside of their comfort zone, yeah, it probably irks them.
Yeah. I mean, I also have to say that I thought the performance was fine. Kirk Hammett's one of my favorite people in the world, but I would say that they're, as a result of the game itself, they're probably banned for life.
Well, I went through a big thing a couple days ago where the Penguins invited Andrew W.K. to Pittsburgh.
Right.
Because whenever we score a goal, they play party hard.
Okay.
So they invite him to Pittsburgh. The Penguins are shut out, and he never gets to hear his song over the PA.
Oh, my.
And then we have a line called the HBK line. So in Game 5 of the Tampa series, we invite the heartbreak kid Shawn Michaels to Pittsburgh. The Penguins lose, and no one on the HBK line scores a goal. And then on Monday, San Jose invites Metallica to play, and they lose. So I think it's just bad mojo to invite guests to a hockey game.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd want to do that. I think that's just too much pressure.
But, Lyle, I'm going to give this a yay.
You are.
I enjoyed it.
Well, only because
it
you won.
It was different. Well, yeah, we won, but it's different, and it wasn't an American Idol contestant singing the national anthem.
That's true. That's true. And I thought they did a good job. Yeah.
So next up, Drake's album Views has been number one on the Billboard 200 for 5 straight weeks, while his single One Dance has been number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for 3 weeks. He's actually held both the top spots for the last 3 weeks. I call that a double doozer. And in case you're wondering, the record for having a double doozer like this belongs to both the Beatles and Whitney Houston, who did it for 12 straight weeks. So yay, A, or nay?
Blah, 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 nay. Nay. I mean, listen, I mean, it's great for Drake. Love the Drake, hate the Drake, whatever. But it's important to him. But as we've discussed before, it's like you can't make these comparisons. I mean... It would take you considerable research to even understand how exactly they're compiling these things. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, in the old days, it was pretty simple. You just paid for it. No, you just sold records. I don't know. I mean, okay.
I'm going to give it an A.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's impressive to have the number one album and number one song in the country, and he's done it for 3 straight weeks.
Well, no, I mean, I, again, from his perspective, it's yay.
Oh, yeah.
From my perspective, I just don't like the comparisons. I don't think they work. I don't think you can equivocate those things.
But what I don't like, though, is that he continues to put out singles, and he's probably working on a new album right now.
Right.
Why can't he just enjoy One Dance?
Well, if you read there's a review of the record in one of the more recent New Yorker magazines, and it basically takes the position that Drake is a miserable person. Why is he so miserable? If you read his lyrics, he's miserable, and yet he shouldn't be because everything's going great. It's all going
great.
Enjoy
it, man. Yes.
This is awesome. You're from Canada. I mean, come on. This is huge.
So The Descendants will release their first new album in 12 years on July 29th called Hypercaffeum Spazinate. Yay, A, or nay?
I actually listened to the first song that they released, Victim of Me. I would say A. You know, I mean, I've never been a huge fan of theirs, although I like Bill Stevenson. He's always been a good guy, and I don't really know the other guys. And I'm happy for them that they want to do this. And you know, we've had this conversation before. It's like, if that's what you want to do, then you know, more power to you. But I have to admit that listening to the song, I was just kind of nonplussed.
I'm A.
Yeah,
I mean, 12 years ago seems like a long time, but when you get older, it's not that long ago. 2004.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem that far back in the rear view.
No, and I mean, they're going to play a bunch of dates, right? I mean, they're lined up to play festivals and stuff like
that. Yeah, they're
going
to tour.
Yeah.
So I'm A on it.
Yeah.
If they had put out an album in 1983 and then they just put out an album now and it was great, I would give it a yay.
Yeah, I guess so.
But did you know, Lyle, that on the 40 greatest punk albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone, The Descendants' Milo Goes to College, released in 1982, ranks number 16.
Yeah, ahead of us.
Yeah.
I know. I think that might make Bill blush, actually, but
yeah, Minor Threat's complete discography, number 27.
Well, I mean,
on the list.
Listen, you know, Milo Goes to College is a nice record, you know. It's a good record. I think it's It's funny. It's interesting because whenever I ask people, like, oh, so what, you know, what were your favorite hardcore bands? I never hear the Descendants.
Mm-hmm.
But I yeah. think if I say, hey, how about the Descendants? Everybody goes like, oh, yeah, love them, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's actually a good place to be, I think. You know, it's like people don't necessarily put you there immediately, but when they're reminded about you, they go, yeah, I like them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Okay. So Axl Rose has issued a takedown request with Google over a picture taken at a concert in 2010 in which he looks, shall we say, a bit pudgy. In the age of the meme, social media had a field day. One included the caption, "Take me down to the bakery city where the pies have cream and the cakes are tasty." Google has not complied yet.
So it sounds to me like Axl wants to have his cake and eat it too, right?
Lyle.
I know. No, I mean, I don't really understand this stuff. Okay, so, you know, first of all, what possible grounds do you have for saying take down a picture that I don't like of me? I mean, it's not like the picture is some sort of Photoshopped composite where they've put him in some sort of, you know, horrible situation, you know, cutting someone's head off or something like that. I mean, I can understand that, but I don't...
I think his problem was with the memes.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I guess, but I mean...
Because the picture originated on a music site where they were just recapping the concert.
Right.
And it was obviously a bad angle. We all take bad pictures.
Sure.
And he was a bit pudgier than he is now.
Right.
And like I said, social media jumped all over it.
Yeah, but I mean, but the whole notion of social media.
Yeah, but how can you regulate the internet?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, the whole concept of social media is that it's not, you can't regulate it. You can't control it. That the problem I have with these people is that they try to use social media for their own purposes. Mm-hmm. And then they get upset when it bites them. It's sort of like, you know, here's my pet alligator. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to take it around town and like extort money from people. And then basically it turns and bites you in the leg and you go, ah, screw this thing.
Yeah.
Send
so
it
you
back.
Give this a, is this a yay, a, or a nay to you?
Well, I mean, it's a yay in the sense that it's once again someone trying to do something that's impossible. I mean, I'll give it that. Like, good luck to him, man. I mean, like, but I mean, again, Jim, do you have a phone number that we can call Google and go, hi, we don't like this? Because if I could do that, I'd have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
I don't like this, man.
It's a nay. Total nay. Just ignore it. Overcome, Axl.
Overcome.
Right now, Axl is overcoming.
Absolutely.
He looks good. He's playing with Guns N' Roses. He's playing with AC/DC. Forget about it.
Yep.
There will be good memes if Guns N' Roses plays well in this stadium tour.
Absolutely.
And then finally, in yay, a, or nay, dates for Coachella 2017 have already been announced. It is happening on April 14th through 16th and April 21st through 23rd in 2017. General admission tickets are $399. And VIP packages start at $899.
So is that a price? Well, is that a price for both weekends, or is that a price for you have to pay for each weekend?
That's one weekend.
That's just one weekend.
Yeah.
Whoa.
$400.
Oh, I say nay.
But if you break it up, what if you break it up in the 3 days? It's like 100, 120, 130 something.
I guess. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm nay.
Yeah, I don't, well, the VIP thing is something that's really interesting too. I mean, I get it. I get it. But mm-hmm. but I don't know that we've talked about this too. It's like, I don't know if I like this idea. If you're going to throw a festival. You know, don't throw a festival that has tiered admission. Don't throw a festival mm-hmm. that's like, because the idea of the festival is like everyone comes together, and I mean, I know this is all bullshit, but at least, you know, on the surface of it, everybody comes together, everybody's in the same place doing the same thing, getting into the same music. And then you go, no, if you want to pay a lot more money, we'll put you backstage, give you food, give you some fans, you know.
Well, with the whole economics of it, this is how festivals make money.
Oh,
with
I know.
VIP packages.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the great ways to make money.
So So it's a, I think it's a necessary evil.
Probably.
But this is nay to me because let festival season end before you announce the dates.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well,
that feels like, yeah, they're like, they're trumping other festivals. We get it. Coachella's big. People are going to go. It's going to sell out. Do this in October or something.
Right. There doesn't seem to be a lot of reason to do it now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know whether, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine there's a sort of economic priority for you to do it now. So,
yeah. You know. They're just showing off.
Showing off.
Yeah. Do you have any birthdays today?
We do have some birthdays today. Actually, I have to give you a sort of mea culpa as well. I think that I actually underestimated everybody's birthday last week by 1 year. So that's my gift to everybody. You're a year younger,
According
to me, you're a year younger. So, because the worldwide interweb is often a confusing place if you don't do simple math. But yes, yeah. we actually have the aforementioned Kanye West, who I believe is 39 years old today. And I don't know whether there's any special birthday plans.
Imagine 40 though. What's he gonna do for 40?
Well, I don't see. That's the thing. Like, I had a I think you know him, but I'm not gonna mention the name. But I have a friend who, like, he would regularly send out these things where it's like, "Come join me for my 34th birthday," and you'd go to like some big place that they'd rented out and with catering and the whole. It's like 34. What's the significance of 34? So I don't know, but you're right. 40 will be a big deal. Well, I mean, if he wants to make it a big deal, I mean, I'm not. You're talking to like the anti-birthday person. I'm not a birthday guy. I never have been. I don't even really care if people don't remember that it's my birthday.
And ironically, you have carved out this niche on the show,
right? Where I celebrate. Yeah. I'm perfectly willing to celebrate everybody else's birthday. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't have a problem with you know, if you want me to celebrate your birthday, I'm happy to do it. I just don't care if you celebrate mine. I think that's basically what it works out to. But I was looking through the celebrity birthdays thing, as I do every week, and I was thinking, and I remember last year they didn't have me, and I'm thinking,
hey. Yeah, wait, when is your birthday? I was going to ask you that.
August 23rd.
Oh, okay.
So now, here's the thing, though. Just, I would like, Kanye, can you call me or text me and let me know who I have to call to make sure that they have my birthday?
Okay.
Because Kanye knows how to call people. He knows who to call. So, I mean, if he's going to get video screens, he can certainly get my birthday in the famous birthdays.
Yeah. My buddy Kid Meevan, who played drums in my band, his birthday is August 23rd, and my nephew's birthday is August 23rd.
Really?
Yeah, or is it? I think it's my nephew's. Yeah. Wow. Okay, that's a.
I think there's some.
Very
I think there's
date.
Some. I think there's some other quasi or famous people on that day too. I can't remember off the top of my head. I know one. I know one of Peter Gabriel's daughters is. We have the same birthday. But moving on, Nick Rhodes from Duran Duran, the keyboard player from Duran Duran, is 54. Boz Scaggs, famous for his 1976 record Silk Degrees and the songs Lowdown and Lido Shuffle, is 72. He was also with Steve Miller for a while, so that's sort of the connection there with the San Francisco scene. Mick Hucknall from Simply Red, who everybody remembers for their big hits in the 80s, is 56. And Greg Ginn, the guitar player of Black Flag.
Yes.
And all-around crazy motherfucker is 60. One of the big lightning rods in all of sort of hardcore punk music. He also ran and owned SST Records, and you could spend a lot of time going sifting through that and the legal things that happened. But Greg, who was an early hero of mine, is 62.
Hey, do you have Greg's email?
No.
Oh. I was going to say, you should email him happy birthday.
I should. I can probably get it. But yeah. I don't know that Greg's a happy birthday kind of guy.
Okay.
I don't know what Greg is. I mean, Greg was the guy who, you know, when we'd hang out with them, he never would say anything. And then all of a sudden he would just say something and everyone would go like, oh, he said something. But everyone behind his back and even to his face called him Lurch, because he was like, you know, a big tall guy, was kind of like zombie-like and creepy. But happy birthday, Greg.
Yeah, happy birthday, Greg Ginn. Not a lot of change on the charts this week. The number one single on the Billboard Hot 100, as I mentioned earlier, One Dance from Drake featuring Wizkid and Kyla. He's enjoying the double doozer, so the number one album on the Billboard 200, Views from Drake. Number one song on iTunes, Can't Stop the Feeling from Justin Timberlake. The number one album on iTunes, once again, Lemonade from Beyonce. I think last week it was Blake Shelton. And the number one song on Spotify, I think it's been number one for over a month now, One Dance from Drake featuring Wizkid and Kyla. When we come back, it is time for our music picks of the week.
In the Cooper's nothing to me. This bum go over five rounds, I won't return to the United States for 30 days. That's final.
Okay, since you're not worried about this guy Cooper, how about when you get through with him? What are your plans after that?
Well, you're right. I'm not even worried about this big bum. Cooper will only be a warm-up until I get to that big, ugly bear, Sonny Liston.
London, England, I jumped off the airplane. Picture, cameraman, everywhere I go, you can look in the gym today. The TV, the cameraman, everybody follows me. I'm so great.
Hey there, everybody. Back from the quick timeout, Jim Shear and Lyle Presler. The week in music. Time now for the music picks of the week. I will go up first. Curious to hear your thoughts on this band. My music pick of the week is Oblivious from The Strokes off of their Future, Present, Past EP. This reminds me of a Rat-a-Tat song. It also has the qualities of a Strokes song. And when you're listening to the beginning, you're like, yeah, this is nice. And then you kind of get sleepy, like I do with some Stroke songs, but I like how he wakes everyone up in the chorus. Mm. Yeah, Julian sounds awake when that refrain hits. Are you a fan of the Strokes?
No.
Okay.
Just simply put, no. I thought their first record was one of the most overhyped records in the modern era. And I mean, I can remember when it was about to come out and people were saying it's better than Nevermind. It's, you know,
yeah,
it's the biggest thing since so-and-so. And I just always thought of it as being a very New York blinders on kind of thing.
Yes. I totally agree with that.
I don't dislike them at all. I don't, and I certainly don't know them or know, you know, that much about them. I mean, there have been songs over the years I've heard that I liked, but at the same time, it just, I think the problem with overhyping is that it tends to poison people like me. It you know,
yeah,
it raises my expectations to a point which are unreasonable. And then when I hear it, I go, all right.
So what I did, I felt the same as you. I was like, come on, guys, this isn't that good. And then a year and a half later, I had the album on my desk and I said, okay, I'll give it a try. I'm like, yeah, this is good. It's nice.
Oh, yeah, it's good. I mean,
so it's not blowing my mind, but I think it's good. And then I remember the stuff they put out after that, everyone would pan.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, this isn't that bad. I kind of like it.
Well, it was pretty much the same thing. I mean, it was, you know, it was good. I'm certainly not going to sit here and say that it's bad, because it's not. And there's always some element of truth to the hype. I mean, you know, it's mm-hmm. very rare that something gets so hyped that turns out to be absolute garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, that rarely happens. And you know, but I think there's just something a little bit too high and inside about the whole thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, will it play in Peoria? And I think the answer was sort of no, it won't.
Yeah.
You know, but there's something that's not a crime. I mean, that's not a crime at all. Yeah.
I want to let everyone know that I'm not the biggest Strokes fan. And I'm not just saying this to appease you, Lyle, but
I appreciate that.
But I do appreciate the Strokes. I think the single is catchy, and it reminds me, like, I love the group Rat-a-Tat, mm-hmm. and this reminds me of a Rat-a-Tat song with vocals.
Good point.
So here you go, Oblivious from the Strokes.
Take off from love.
also think they're...
There it is.
They're channeling... It seems like they're channeling a little television in there, too. You know, it's like mm-hmm. a little bit of arpeggiated, yeah. you know, and the movement, the up and down on the guitar. Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's good. And I think you're dead on about the rat-a-tat thing, by the way.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not going to be my song of the summer, but I enjoyed it. I'm glad that the Strokes have put out an album. I think behind the scenes, I don't know how well they get along. So... They got along well enough to put out a few songs this summer and play festivals,
absolutely.
So that's good enough for me.
Good.
Yeah. So what's your music pick of the week?
This is a little off base for me to some extent, but I went with Girls At, with the little ampersand signed, or the at sign, by Joey Perp, and it features Chance the Rapper. And
what?
Why aren't you?
Where did this come from?
You know, it's funny. I was just cruising around and I saw this thing and I don't know even why I clicked on it, but I clicked on it and I started listening to it and I just liked it and it brought a smile. It's funny. I listened to it and I smile.
Okay.
That's the test. It's like I don't know why I smile at it. I think it's funny. It's not so goofy that it's just ridiculous. My little bit of research into Joey Perp is that he does sort of vacillate between sort of these silly kinds of things and then these more serious types of things.
Uh-huh.
But if go ahead and play it and let's hear.
Okay. Girls At by Joey Perp featuring Chance the Rapper.
Where all the girls at, with the credit cards and the high heels, the Mercedes Benz with the big wheels, when they hit this jam they can't sit still, yeah they know what's up. Where all the girls at, with the Birkin bags and the big house, the Mercedes Benz with the tits out, when they hit this jam they turn the lights out, yeah they know what's up. Polo socks, polo tee, polo bib, polo sheets, photo Benz, photo Jeep, photo booth, hoes and me. She taking photos of me that she carry all around like rosaries. She said she never did it with the lights on. Baby, we gon' see. She so cow, she no hoe. She no smoke, she no toke. She no Chance, she no Vic. She no gang, she gon' go. Wear your heels, wear your clothes. Wear your hair in a bun when you head back home. Wear your purse, wear your phone. One more question before y'all go. Where all the girls at, with the credit cards and the high heels, the Mercedes Benz with the big wheels, when they hit this jam they can't sit still, yeah they know what's up. Where all the girls at, with the Birkin bags and the big house, the Mercedes Benz with the tits out, when they hit this jam they turn the lights out, yeah they know what's up.
Where all the girls with the book in the club, with the reading glasses on getting shook in the club, reading Ta-Nehisi Coates humming Spotty Yachty Dope, with the wild let them drag me here look in the club. I need a ride home and I need an iPhone. Charge your number. Can you put your shit in my phone? Damn, my phone died. Can you put it in my man's phone? Damn, his car died too. Can you drive my man's home? Where the girls in the club with the black dress, with the big fat booty and the flat chest? Who trying to wear the black dress to my address? I got a bed, no frame, just a mattress. Where the tall girls at? You bad. Where the small girls at? You bad. With a mid-sized girl, with a mid-sized girls, with a mid-sized girl, you bet.
Where all the girls at, with the credit cards and the high heels, come and sit with the big wheels.
I would love to have video of you listening to this song.
You know what? It's funny to me. It reminded me a little bit of Beastie Boys' "Girls," right? I mean, there's a little bit of that. I like the I like the repetition of it. The words are hilarious. I mean, and they're actually hilarious if you happen to know women who have Birkin bags, and things like that. I like the fact that in the middle of the song, I think it's Chance calls out like, you know, where are all the tiny girls, where are all the large girls, where are all the medium girls. It doesn't seem to have a cruelty to it at all. It's very playful, and it also reminded me a little bit of that Callis song Milkshake.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it's sort of like almost like it has that same kind of cadence to it. It's I don't know. I mean, listen, I'm not making any great claims for the thing, but like I say, it does make me smile. So
it reminds me of the rap group Kool Kids.
Uh-huh.
And it all makes sense because Kool Kids are from Chicago and Joey Perp is from Chicago. So this is the hip-hop sound permeating the streets of the Windy City. We're going to take one more break, and when we come back, we have a very special Selena Gomez DNC edition of Ask Lyle.
Take away your things and go. You can't take back what you said. I know I've heard it all.
man, I've been waiting all week for this. So let's do the Ask Lyle jingle right now.
Ask Lyle.
And there's actually just one question this week. Lyle attended the Selena Gomez concert with special opening act DNCE. Please take me through the proceedings.
Oh, I will. Well, actually, my wife and I took our daughter and her friend. So I had 2 9-year-olds and the old people. If I can tell you the number of dirty looks I got, my daughter shot me when I even moved my leg to the music.
Okay.
We started out with a meet and greet with Selena.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was really something. A bunch of...
Did you get a picture?
No, I didn't get the picture, but she hugged everybody. I mean, that was her thing, to hug you. So
Did you get a hug?
I thought about going up and getting a hug, but I felt like that was maybe a little much. And okay. There were a lot of people. There was a huge line of people going in. So it was more or less, you know, let the kids do it, and we'll be on our way. So I actually did not know that DNCE was opening. I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't know anything about it except that I've got to take these 2 9-year-olds to this thing.
So when did you discover that DNCE was going to open?
On the way there, I got a text from my wife saying, oh, I forgot to tell you, DNCE are opening. And I was like, oh,
because as everyone knows, your greatest music pick of the week thus far on this show has been "Cake by the Ocean."
Absolutely.
From DNCE.
Yeah, and they of course did perform that as their closing Oof. Song. But the interesting thing is, I'm sitting there watching the DNCE show, and you know, it's fine. I mean, it's entertaining, you know. But then all of a sudden, they go into this sort of hardcore thing. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden my wife goes, "Minor Threat, Minor Threat, Minor Threat," and I'm looking at her with, you know, bewildered, and she points, and they had these four screens, these video screens, vertically behind them, you know, on the stage, but you know, up about maybe 9 feet, and they were showing just a series of images, and these images were of all of this hardcore and punk stuff. And they repeated, and one of them was a flyer, a Minor Threat flyer from the early 80s. And
wow.
I saw Misfits, I saw Minor Threat, I saw Ramones, I saw Sex Pistols stuff, you know.
So were you honored or were you insulted?
Well, I certainly wasn't insulted. I don't know, to be honored, I was more curious. It was like, I mean, we've sort of seen this kind of thing happen before, and what usually turns out is that it's some art director. In other words, the principals don't know anything about it. They don't even
like,
know what's
going on. Lyle Presler's not going to be at a DNC concert.
Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah, I mean, and they don't even know what's being shown, probably. I mean, I don't know that for sure. I mean, I could be completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it was bizarre, and it went on for, you know, like a minute and a half or something like that with, you know, flashing. Everything's, you know, the screens just flash, 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 flash. And I...
Now, did your daughter think anything of it?
Well, if she did, she didn't let on.
Oh,
she's
that's the time that's my dad's band.
Yeah, but she's in that period now where, you know, it's like anything that I do is de facto uncool. Like just not cool. Like don't dance. Well, I can't dance anyway, but don't dance, don't move, don't look at me, don't look at them, don't sing the lyrics, don't tell me what your favorite Selena song is. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. So
close your eyes and shut up, Dad.
She knew. I mean, she knew. She was watching it, but
she knew.
I think she just didn't want to do it. But it reminds me. There was. I don't know whether I told. If I told the story, stop me. But when we first moved to Montclair, I went to the grocery store with my daughter, and she had a Minor Threat shirt on because my wife insisted on putting on a shirt, and I was like, I don't really wish you wouldn't do this. So we go to the grocery store, and we're in the checkout line, and there's this sort of cool young chick there, you know, with hardware in her face and everything. And she looks at my daughter's shirt, and she says, "Oh, cool band." And my daughter goes, "My dad was in the band." And she just, and the woman just looked at me like, "You lying son of a bitch." I mean, you know, there was like, I'm not. You told your daughter this? Nice going, dude. You know, I mean, there's so I've learned over the years to kind of like not, you know, not really get into that kind of stuff. So I think my daughter was nonplussed about it, but But it was interesting, and I'd love to know the backstory on it, if there is one.
My question is, was there a Glennie Friedman photo attached to the flyer?
No, there wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Because if so, we'd have to get on the horn.
We'd have to get on the horn, and Jim would have to make... Yeah. He'd have to call Kanye, and Kanye could tell him who he needs to call, and he could call up. And
call Axel. Axel can call Google.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Just get the whole posse involved.
Yeah. So, Selena then...
Oh, yeah.
...takes the stage after DNCE. My first question is, when does she perform Same Old Love? Because to me... That is an awesome mid-set song.
You know,
please tell me she didn't close with it or encore with it.
No, she did something really... She did a number of things that were interesting to me. She front-loaded her set with a lot of her hits.
Ooh.
Which was interesting because then she went into the middle and towards the end of the set, which really didn't have like screaming huge hits, which was a little bit surprising. I mean, I as the songs kind of unfolded, I was like, she's playing this now? Now she's going to play this. Now she's going to play this. And she did not do... And the other weird thing was that there would be a period where she would leave the stage, right? And I guess for costume changes. Mm-hmm. And they were fairly elaborate costumes, you know, as you can imagine. And what they would do is they'd show video. And she did a number... she did a couple of songs where she wasn't even on the stage. They just played the song.
What?
Yeah. Now, what's the song that she can't sing because she breaks down and cries whenever she sings it? Which
was that the first single off her latest album?
No, I think it was off an earlier record. I'm not sure. Oh, and you see, now I shouldn't even have brought it up because I can't remember the name of it. But it doesn't. But when I said, I don't understand why she's not singing this, my daughter said, because she cries every time she sings it. So there you go. That was the
power.
That was the reasoning.
That's the power of performance.
Absolutely. And so, but what and the other interesting thing that she did. I mean, she had a band. She had the band was kind of in two groups. So on one side of the stage, you had them on a riser. It was a keyboard player and two backup singers. And then on the other side, she had a guitar player, a drummer, and a bass player. And she did a clever thing, which Madonna pioneered, which is she gets two backup singers who can sing her exact timbre.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of unison singing. A lot.
Yep.
It wasn't... Mm-hmm. And I mean, they did other things as well, but it was a lot of unison singing to just sort of fatten it out, because mm-hmm. she doesn't have, like, the most powerful voice. But she was definitely singing. She does not dance, which is interesting.
Ooh.
Now, I don't know whether she can't dance or whether she just says, you know, I'd rather sing, but she sort of walks through and she does moves and little things, but she doesn't do the dancing thing.
But she wasn't sitting on an injury throne.
She was not sitting on an injury throne. Okay. And the other thing she did, which was interesting, she had dancers, a very talented bunch of dancers, I must say. They danced the whole time. I mean, it was, I can't even imagine the stamina that it takes to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. And she kind of presented it as, this is the group. Like, it wasn't like, it's me and them. It was like, it's us.
Okay.
So that was kind of interesting. And she even, on several songs, had the backup singers come out and the musicians come out and sort of perform with her. So it didn't have that, you know, Lady Gaga, I'm a star, Madonna, I'm a star, like, I'm the focus, period. Mm-hmm. Which was kind of refreshing in a way. I mean, I sort of felt like she presented it to people like it's an ensemble. It's a show, and everybody's a part of the show. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Okay.
But you know, it's interesting. Somebody pointed out, I think in the New York Times maybe, that you know she's faced it's a very difficult thing. I mean, we're talking about another Disney person, right? And mm-hmm. it's very difficult for those people to make a transition. I mean, she's 23 years old now. She's trying to transition into being a different kind of a pop star. And mm-hmm. I think so she was trying real hard to kind of be serious and even scowl and to wear black and, you know, mm-hmm. all this stuff. But the audience responded when she would slip and start smiling and laughing.
Mm.
That's when you got the biggest cheers, the biggest stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of like they still want her to be the little girl. You know,
yeah,
they want that, and I think I'm sure that's a hard thing for her to try to wrap her head around that whole thing.
She'll find a balance.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because I mean, she's been on tours before, but I feel like this is her breakthrough tour.
Yep, Yeah.
Where people like me are starting to pay attention,
and, you know,
where I wouldn't have in the past.
Yeah, and I mean, I still have that kind of, the problem I have with her, as we've discussed, is that she just looks like a little girl. And mm-hmm. and she's got the Leonardo DiCaprio syndrome, you know, where it's like no matter how old she gets, she's still going to look like a little girl. And
I think she has a small head.
Yeah, small head. You know,
yeah,
normally
small cranium.
Normally the as you know, big head is the rule. I mean, look at actors. They all have giant heads. I mean, sometimes their heads are so big you think they're going to like fall off the top of their bodies. And that's part of the that's part of the photogenic quality to them. That's part of it. No, it really is. I mean, I've read about this, but it really is. But she doesn't have that, and I think, and she seems very sweet. I will say that I think that she's very, it's real. It's real stuff with her. I think she really feels the stuff she's talking about, and she really does believe in her fans. And clearly, I mean, the meet and greet, she must have met and hugged 100 people or more. So,
okay.
You know, I mean, clearly she's in it to win it. But I have to say, like, look, I've been to a couple of these things, you know, over the years now. And, I mean, there's a certain amount of embarrassment of just being, like, you know, everyone's looking. I mean, it always seems like every 20-year-old girl is just looking at me going, like, oh, my God, what are you doing here? You know, it's kind of the way, well, when we were punk rockers, it was kind of the way we looked at, like, if somebody with long hair, like a guy with long hair showed up, like a hippie-looking
right.
dude, we'd look at him and go, like, what the fuck are you doing here, man? I mean, we didn't do anything to him or anything like that, but it was just like, what is that guy doing here?
What goes around comes around,
absolutely.
Lyle.
Absolutely.
Yeah. For Lyle Presler, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.
So long.
Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.